Well, it's been 4 months since we had the privilege of talking with the executive mayor of Mngeni, Chris Pappas. So time to catch up, because lots happening in that part of the world which has implications all around the country. We'll find out from him in a moment. Hi, Chris. As always, lovely chatting with you. The BizNews community love to hear what's happening to their favorite KZN mayor. Although I must admit, at some point I thought you might be the KZN premier, or at least a cabinet member in province, or even in national parliament. What happened?
Yeah, so I guess, well, first of all, good morning. I guess we didn't get the results that we wanted in terms of, you know, being the majority party for various reasons. But at the end of the day, I think we still managed to achieve what we wanted insofar as changing the government of KwaZulu-Natal. I had the decision to make whether or not to go to parliament. I was not parliament, the legislature. I was number one on the list. Or to continue with my job, my role, my responsibility here in the municipality as mayor. And I chose the latter. I chose to finish the project that I started here and allow the new government of provincial unity to work with other capable people.
That's so interesting, because if you were in another political party, you would have been deployed. So you have a freedom of choice.
We do. We have the freedom of choice to apply and go through a rigorous process, and we also have the freedom of choice to decline once given the opportunity. It's called liberalism and rights. Some political parties don't have that.
Well, they do say that all politics is local, Chris. So I suppose that's also part of informing your decision to stay at Mngeni and to perhaps help your party to continue to build on a very good record that it's got so far.
Yeah, absolutely. So as I was saying, is you know, mayors, local councillors, I don't think get enough credit or recognition for the work that we do. You know, there's always a lot of fanfare and focus on ministers and NECs and members of parliament. Whereas the people who are on the ground every day, listening to people, responding to people, you know, living in communities, are councillors, are mayors. The people who have to deal with the issues, regardless of whether or not they are local competency or not, are mayors and councillors. So there's this big disconnect that we have, in that we presume that there's this hierarchy, that you start as a councillor and you must end as an MP. You know, it's not quite the same. It's not like starting as a cashier in your business and ending up as the CEO. I think the work that we do as mayors and as councillors is, you know, with all due respect to everyone else, is a lot more important in the daily lives of people out there. And I think one day maybe South Africans will give us the recognition, not the credit, the recognition for the work that public representatives do in moving communities forward. But it's fulfilling, and that's why many of us continue to do it, whether it's Jordan or Celiers or Annalie. You know, we make real differences every day.
And you on it at the moment. Just unpack for us the story of Hilton, which is hitting certainly the local news and starting to get into the national news, the fight that's going on there about the electricity supply to Hilton and who actually is supporting that community.
Yeah, so we have a strange situation here where the Msunduzi municipality, which is Pietermaritzburg, supplies electricity to the Mngeni municipality, particularly to a community of Hilton, which borders Pietermaritzburg. This is an old setup from when Hilton was still a clinic committee, a small town, and that's the only place where they could get electricity from, although they managed their own affairs. So we sit with a situation where the Mngeni municipality has the NERSA electricity distribution license for Hilton, and the law says that we must distribute electricity there, and that if someone else is to distribute electricity, there must be a written agreement, a contract in place, which doesn't exist. So what we're demanding from Msunduzi, and it's been a process that we started in 2020, is for a formal agreement to be put in place. And that's important for a number of reasons. The first thing is that the residents who receive service from the Mngeni municipality, Howick, Bopomeni, other areas where we supply, those areas get a far better service than Msunduzi customers. People in Hilton can go 2, 3, 4 days without electricity for minor things such as blown fuses, and things like that. The average turnaround time for electricity outages in Howick is 4 hours, and even that's a lot. It's very rarely that we have power outages or faults that last longer than that. It's usually a major outage. And even then, we do things such as backfeeding, and we're constantly updating residents, and we make plans. In Hilton, it's completely different. The municipality, or the service provider, I call them, because that's what they are, don't provide updates. They don't give information. And that's not fair to have the same municipality providing two different services. The other is regulatory issues. Who gets held accountable? So Msunduzi generates all the income from the electricity from that area, but never have to account to the residents. So when there are problems, people are phoning my office, they're phoning their local councillor, but we don't have the power to instruct the officials to go and fix the electricity problem or to rework budgets to solve whatever crisis it might be. And it's not the mayor of Msunduzi or the officials of Msunduzi that come to account. It's us that account, which is that's besides being unfair. I mean, we signed up for the job, but accountability is one of the pillars of our constitution. And then basic maintenance. Many of the street lights in Hilton don't work. And if you report them, you're lucky to get a response or if they just get fixed. Developmental concerns around that as well. There's areas that are dark that need streetlights. In our areas of supply, as Mgeni, we've rolled out, I think over the last 2.5 years, must be around 1,200 new streetlights, replaced old ones with brand new LEDs. And that's not happening in Hilton. And then the last one is around finances. And there's two elements to that. Firstly, is that the Msunduzi municipality is taking the income generated from Hilton residents and plowing it into the rest of that city, whether it is to pay their 600 million rand that they owe Eskom, so they're indebted to Eskom, we are not, which puts electricity supply it compromises that, or if it's to cover the costs of other services that they provide in the municipality. So they're taking Hilton resources and spending them in other tell you when, in the municipality. And ordinarily, that would be fine, except that the Hilton residents get no benefit from development in Msunduzi. If it was Mgeni, we would be doing things such as upgrading public transport infrastructure for people who work in the Hilton area. We'd be upgrading parks or putting new dustbins, working on, supplement those types of services that then benefit those residents. And then lastly is credit control. So as a municipality, the only tax that we really have that we can charge people is property tax, or rates, as people call them. One of our control mechanisms is to turn off people's electricity when they don't pay. Luckily, Hilton is a decent paying area, so that's not the primary driver. But it still is a mechanism. We've got a property owner who owns about 6 properties and owes us about 3 million rand. Now, we haven't got the mechanism, and he's very wealthy, but we haven't got the mechanisms to go and turn off the electricity at his properties because that's a service that's provided by Msunduzi. So the long and the short is that we want a written agreement. We want our rights constitutionally, as well as in terms of the Municipal Finance Management Act and the Municipal Systems Act, to have that written agreement in place to hold them accountable and to make sure that the Hilton residents are receiving the same type of service as is being provided in the rest. Interestingly, as
well, you did talk a little earlier about liberalism. It sounds like you're being very liberal here. You want a written agreement, but why do you think that's going to change anything?
So it holds people accountable. Firstly, if there's a written agreement, people can't run away from accountability. If it says that you must repair streetlights within 7 days, and you don't repair streetlights within 7 days, then there must be penalties for that. If it says that 1% of the income generated from electricity sales must come back to Mgeni, then that's the agreement. We have something to hold them accountable to. But more than that, it is the law. The law says, I think it's section 74 of the Systems Act, gives you the mechanism with which you can deliver services. So at the moment, what we're doing, both Mgeni and Msunduzi, is illegal. We are just making up our own rules to the detriment of the residents and the businesses of that area. We have got a second, what would you call it, tool up our sleeve, but it is what we want to call the last resort, is that there's an organized group in Umsunduzi that wanted to take that municipality to court because they believe, and I'm in agreement with them, that they are not fulfilling the conditions of their NERSA license. In other words, the electricity distribution network and their service has become so bad in Umsunduzi that NERSA, we believe, can actually take their license away and let someone else distribute the electricity, for example, Eskom. We would then join as a co-applicant in that. We can't take them directly to court without following an intergovernmental dispute process, which we have started. But to join as a co-applicant in that case would then fast-track what we're trying to do, and that is insulate the residents of Hilton from the maladministration and the poor governance that's taking place in Umsunduzi, leading to the deaths. At the moment, Alec, there's a power outage in Hilton that started at last night. The first update that we got was this morning, and the update is we haven't got stores. So be prepared to wait, because we haven't got stores in place. Now, that's bizarre. We our service providers, our departments don't let that happen. The only time that would happen, if it's major, you know, sort of substation type equipment that you need, and even then, we make sure that we have contingencies in place. So we borrow from another municipality and give it back to them. So there's not these huge waits. But what kind of a response is that? Sorry, we don't have spares. And now you must wait and we can't tell you when.
If I was living in Hilton, I'd be asking you why I have to pay you rates and pay them electricity. And if they aren't fulfilling their job, why don't you take it away from them? Certainly, as there is no contract, as you've explained. So why are you being so nice?
Because let me show you these things here. This is a big library of local government law, which is highly overregulated. And for us to be able to be less nice, in other words, take them to court or to get an interdict against them, we have to follow the intergovernmental dispute process. So we've decided to follow the route where we engage with Treasury and the Department of Cooperative Governance on different issues. So the one is that this is a financial issue, because of the Umsunduzi is generating an income. And the other is a service delivery issue in terms of the delivery of services, and that falls into two different departments. So once that is exhausted, which we've got to that point now where we believe we've tried everything, we've been nice, we've listened to their lousy excuses, we are now at a point where we've actually got confirmation from Treasury and from COPTA that they've received our intention to dispute. And they are, first step is a mediation. So they'll call us in for a mediation. Thereafter, we will then go to court. Umsunduzi knows they haven't got a leg to stand on. And that's why they sort of give us a little bit every time. And they'll, you know, to try and prolong this process until the end of my term, at least, in the hopes that the next person that will come in will just leave it. But we won't let that happen. Yeah, and the question about the Hilton residents, they have every right to ask that question. They also vote for you know, certain candidates and certain political parties in Umgeni, but then are not able to hold people accountable to the issues that they face, which is wrong. It's one of the things that's in our papers to say that constitutionally our democracy requires that we are able to hold government accountable, and the Hilton residents are not able to do that. So that's the first thing. The second thing is, our long-term goal is to take over electricity supply, and we've made that clear to Umsunduzi. It's ours to distribute, but we also realize that the way in which the network is structured, the way in which it's been designed, it doesn't make that an overnight achievement, and that's why we've been very practical in what we're trying to do. We said, listen, we know this, that you're making money off of this. We know all the other issues that you have. But let's start off with a few basic things that we can win when they do, and then you know, hold each other accountable too.
Well, thanks for that, Chris, because it's a lot more complex. It always is a lot more complex than it seems. I suppose some of the Hilton residents would be saying the door's opened a little. You've got Treasury, you've got COGDA who are supporting you in a way. Just kick the door right open. But I can understand the practicalities of the way that you've unpacked that. But talking about your term, on the May the 29th election, how did people in Mgeni vote, given that we saw this emergence of Jacob Zuma's MK party and that 67% of your voters are Zulu speakers?
Yeah, so we had a huge turnout here in Ungeni. We had 70% of voters turned out to vote, which is incredible. I haven't checked what the turnout was in each municipality, but I can safely say that if it's not the highest, then one of the highest turnouts. The MK had a huge showing here. On the one ballot, they were the biggest party. On the other ballot, we were the biggest party. But what we did find is that as the DA, we grew by 2,500 votes, which is interesting. So it means that there's 2,500 voters extra compared to the 2021 election that have now come forward to vote for the DA. So it's exciting for us going into 2026 because it means if we can turn out the same amount of voters, we would be a much better position than we were in 2021. The ANC completely collapsed. If it was a local government election, they would not have one ward councillor. They lost every single one of their wards, five of them to the MK and one of them to the DA. And they would be here, a party of PR councillors with 13%. And that's the reality that they face. Interestingly as well, if you look at a sort of a more granular level, where we grew and where we didn't, there's some real growth that we showed in township areas, which is great. Shows that that what we're doing is working. There was one ward where we stayed the same, one where we went backwards, and three wards where we went quite significantly forward, and that's in the main township of Mpopomedi. Which is exciting. It means that if we continue to do what we do, as things get better and better, more and more people, specifically who have traditionally not voted for us, would come over. The interesting thing was the split between the ballots, between the national ballot and the provincial ballot. On the national ballot, the MK did better than the DA, but on the provincial ballot, the DA did better than the MK. Which we think has something to do with me being the candidate for premier and also being the mayor of this area, and also then having local people on the ground, speaking about what the provincial opportunities, which are a lot more tangible than having speaking about national government. Yeah, but a lot of work to be done. But all in all, it was good to see us grow by 2,500 votes in all communities and to retain the Litmus Ward being Sandile's ward of Ward 3, Nottingham Road, and then winning another ward of the ANC if it was a local government election.
These are very interesting insights, Chris, not just the results of the election, but what's happening in Hilton and your fight with an incompetent government in Pietermaritzburg your counterparty in this discussion. But has it got national relevance? In other words, are there some doozies versus Mgenis in other parts of the country where you have one of the municipalities that is managing or has the right to the income but isn't actually doing the servicing?
I'm sure there must be. There's a lot of things that NERSA didn't do or didn't complete when we came up with a wall-to-wall municipality system. I know that the same argument can be made with similar principles around Eskom. Eskom should be an electricity generator and then transmitted around the country. But what you find is that they also have customers. Although the constitution says that reticulation of electricity within a municipal boundary is the responsibility of a municipality. So, and I know that happens across the country, where Eskom selectively picks the areas that makes money and then gives to municipalities the areas that don't make money. So, for example, here in Umgeni, all the industrial areas are supplied by Eskom. All the areas like Merivale, Nottingham Road, all these built-up areas are all supplied by Eskom. And then we get given Mpopomedi Township, which is 59 million rands worth of losses. We get the informal settlements. We get areas where there's a higher propensity for people to not pay or can't pay. And that happens across the country. And it's an argument that's gone nowhere. I think largely because SALGA has been dominated by one political party and they've not wanted to fight their own party in government. So I do hope that will change now with the changing dynamics nationally and provincially, even within SALGA in terms of political party makeup. But yes, there are a lot of things that were never completed or need to be changed from the time when we created wall-to-wall municipalities that have these lingering effects on, or negative effects on municipalities. I know in parts of Cape Town, there's Eskom Supply, parts of Tshwane, Bloem, Frankfurt, all these places have pockets of Eskom supply, and it's usually the areas that generate income as opposed to those that don't. You get the exceptions like Soweto and places like that.
So the implications of the ANC going down to 40% in the May the 29th election are far greater than just on the surface of a government of national unity. It is fascinating to hear all of this, Chris, but to end off with, your chief whip, Nhlanhla Yesa Ndlovu, who was murdered on the 5th of December, have you got any update on that?
No, the police have shut us out completely. So it is something that I've taken up with the new chairperson of the Police Portfolio Committee, because as we asked more and more questions and we're trying to provide more and more information, either through our own sources or through contractors of the DA, the police became quieter and quieter and put up bigger and bigger walls to a point where they refused to communicate with us, even as the municipality and with Ntale Yenza's family. They refused to communicate with Ntale Yenza's family if she had his wife, Pretty, if she had lawyers present, which is completely strange. The DA has, acquired the services of, through AfriForum, a dedicated team who specialize in investigations. And when that happens, the police shut down immediately, because what the investigators from AfriForum were finding was not tying in with what the police was saying and the evidence that they claimed to have. So, no, at the moment, we've been completely shut out, but we have raised this now at a police portfolio level, and I'm glad that we have a new police minister, because I do think that our previous police minister, one day stories will come out about how these things are covered up, and, when certain people are implicated, it goes quiet.
Just to close off with, from a global perspective, the South African rand has done incredibly well, relatively speaking, since the election. When you listen for the messages on the breeze, there's a lot of positive things coming through. This conversation that we've had today would never have happened pre-2021, for instance. It was inconceivable. So how do you look back at the progress of the country over the last 3 years that you've been so intimately involved with the democratic process?
So I think what people want, what business wants, is confidence and certainty. And I think for the first time in a long time, regardless of the bumps and bruises that we'll have along the way in figuring out what this new government looks like and sounds like, and how all the children play together. But I think people are happy that for once there's some sort of stability. There's not people bickering and fighting, but there seems to be a concerted effort or more movement forward than backwards, or at least it sounds like that for the time being. We got stuck in this notion that South Africa continuously has to move backwards. And I think people are feeling that South Africa can actually move forwards. Not everything will be perfect and not everything will be right all the time, and a lot of things are going to take time to fix. But I think there's that sentiment that, wow, okay, South Africa can move forward and people can work together. It doesn't just have to be endless shouting at each other and this constant conflict. I also think that there's a new enemy, if you want to use that. And that is, you have some really regressive forces at work in South Africa. And people know that. When I say people, the political establishment knows that. And it's dangerous. And the results of the election prove that. That you can't necessarily speak rational economics, statescraft with the average citizen in South Africa. The average voter, the average citizen in South Africa is hungry. or has been fed lies or is jobless or is disillusioned. And it's easy to take advantage of people who are in that state. So the high-level talks and speeches and bickering and fighting that was taking place, I think people realized that the average voter on the ground is not actually interested and it doesn't resonate with it. And that there's a group of people out there, and it's not just the Mkhonto we Sizwe party, but there's a real establishment against stability in South Africa for their own benefit. And the people on the other side, people in my political party, and the ANC and others have realized that there's more to lose by not working together than there is to gain.
Christopher Pappas is the executive mayor of Mgeni, and I'm Alec Hogg from BizNews.com.